Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover in this audio Psalms chapter 128. I will entitle this psalm, Blessed is Everyone Who Fears the Lord. The header of the psalm is a song of ascents. That's A-S-C-E-N-T-S, going up. Four options as to what ascents means here from the NIV Study Bible. Option number one, the psalm was to be sung to music that went up in pitch. I don't really think that's the answer. Option number two says that the ascent refers to the steps of the Jews returning from captivity, namely the Babylonian captivity, as they walked up to Jerusalem, because Jerusalem's on a hill, and so they had to ascend the hill singing, and so the psalm is called one of the Psalms of Ascents. Option number three, the Levitical singers had to walk up the steps of the temple when they performed their worship duties as singers, and so they would sing this psalm as they walked up the steps of the temple. I think that's reasonable. Option number four. This option states that the ascents refer to the steps of a pilgrim walking up to Jerusalem, because Jerusalem's on a hill. The pilgrim is walking up to Jerusalem, singing this psalm as he goes to one of the three legal Levitical feasts, Passover in the spring, Feast of Weeks in the summer, and Feast of Tabernacles in the fall. That's Adam Clark's view and gotquestions.org's view. I think most people probably take that as to what the Song of Ascents means. Now, Psalms 128 is the ninth of the 15 psalms that are called Song of Ascents in the heading. Those 15 psalms are Psalms 120 to Psalms 134. David was the author of four of them. Solomon was the author of one of them, and the other 10 are anonymous, and this one is anonymous, and so we don't know who the psalmist is, so I will just call him the psalmist. So we begin now by reading verses 1 and 2 of Psalms 128. How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, you will be happy, and it will be well with you. Now that word blessed is just a synonym for happy. In fact, the Young's Literal Translation translates verse 1 of Psalms 128 is this, Oh, the happiness of everyone fearing Jehovah, who is walking in his ways. The Bible in Basic English translates it, Happy is the worshiper of the Lord, who is walking in his ways. And the Holman Christian Study Bible translates it as, How happy is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways. Now, of course, one of the major goals of the human race is to be happy. Well, there's how you be happy. How? Number one, you fear the Lord, you reverence him, and number two, you walk in his ways, you obey him. You don't violate his commands. And of course, there's a lot of unhappy people in this world right now because they're violating God's commands with every breath they take. Now, when the psalmist says that one is blessed when he fears the Lord, he's talking about reverencing the Lord. He's not talking about servile, abject fear, of course. In verse 2, he says, When you shall eat of the fruit of your hands, notice he doesn't say, when you shall not have to work anymore in order to eat the fruit. No, it's the fruit of your hands. You have to plant, you have to work, you have to weed. The lack of labor is never mentioned as a blessing anywhere in the Bible. People are not happy unless they work. But the work must be productive for the worker to be happy. Think of the myth of Sisyphus in the Greek story where Sisyphus rolls the rock all the way up to the top of the hill. That's work, all right. But then as he finishes his work, the stone rolls all the way to the bottom of the hill, and he has to do it again. And he does this for eternity in Hades. That's not happy work. Productive work is when you work and you work and you see some fruit growing. It's just like it takes me a lot of work to do this podcast, and I don't see any fruit of it until I look at my little statistics. Ah, get my little dopamine rush. I did something. Somebody's listening to it. And I think the application here is this. When you have people in a church, most of them have jobs. You need to constantly pray that their jobs not go bad, because when a person's job goes bad, their life goes bad. They're not happy unless they're working, producing, and enjoying the fruit of their labors. So if you fear the Lord, you walk in his ways, you get to enjoy the fruit of your labor. And then he sums up again, you will be happy, which is the same thing as saying you will be blessed. You will be happy and it will be well with you. The NIV translates that, blessings and prosperity will be yours. Now, of course, prosperity includes material prosperity, but it also includes other spiritual blessings, all of which will make one happy. John Piper, of course, has become very famous for his phrase, Christian hedonism, enjoying Christian pleasures. I just heard a seminary professor say that he didn't like that terminology, although he understood what it meant, and he agreed with it, but he just says it leads to misunderstanding. Well, perhaps it does, but it also helps you remember it. The point is that Christians are supposed to be happy. Despite all the suffering, persecution, sickness, and evil that's in this world, we're supposed to be happy. You will be happy, and it will be well with you, says the psalmist. Again, to be happy, as I said before, requires two conditions, that you fear the Lord, verse 1, that you reverence him, and number 2, that you walk in his ways so that you obey him. So reverence and obedience are two conditions for being happy in the Lord. We go now to Psalms 128, verses 3 through 6, and we will finish this psalm. The psalmist continues, your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house, your sons like young olive trees around your table. In this very way, the man who fears the Lord will be blessed. May the Lord bless you from Zion, so that you will see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life, and will see your children's children. Peace be with Israel. Now, in verse 3, the psalmist says, your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. The King James has, your wife will be like a fruitful vine by the sides of thine house. So, in the King James translation, the verse is referring to a vine that grows up on the sides of the house. And the wife is like that. That's all right. The NIV has, your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house, just like the Holman Christian Study Bible. So let's look at some options as to how this verse might be interpreted. If we take the KJV translation, we have the wife like a vine that's crawling up the sides of the house. The vine is fruitful and the wife is fruitful. That works. With the NIV translation, within, or the Holman Christian Study Bible, your wife will be like a fruitful vine within your house. Well, there's a couple of ways we can look at that. The vine could be within the house, as opposed to on the sides of the house, as per the KJV. So the vine could be within the house, and the wife is compared to that fruitful vine, or it could be the wife is in the house. Your wife within your house will be like a fruitful vine. It all boils down to the same thing. However you interpret it is, the wife is fruitful. Now, if we take it as the fruitful vine is within the house, that of course could refer metaphorically to the wife. The wife is like, or not, maybe not metaphorically, but figuratively, like a simile, your wife is like a vine within the house. And that would be figurative, so there would be no actual vine in the house, but you could take it that the wife is like a vine that is literally planted in the house. Here's what John Gill says, the vine is the only tree men plant within doors, which, when it is grown up, they bring out at a hole or window of the house without to have the sun and air, and so its root is within the house and the branches without. That's just like we do today. Lots of people plant plants inside their house and they grow up inside the house. Now, if this is what the psalmist meant, we would have an extended metaphor. The wife is not seen in the house where she is planted, but her children go outside the house to be seen by the world. Just like that vine grows up in the house, nobody can see it until it goes through the window or through the hole in the side of the house, and then everybody in the world sees it. However, we must note that Adam Clark contradicts Gill. He says, it does not appear that there were any vines planted against the walls of the houses in Jerusalem, nor any olive trees in pots or tubs in the inside of their houses, as may be found in different parts of Europe. Well, I don't know how Adam Clark knows that. I'm not aware of any time that he went to ancient Israel to take a look around. So in my humble opinion, the psalmist here is referring to an actual vine growing within a house, and he compares it to a fruitful wife. Then he switches the metaphor and he says, this wife, this fruitful wife who's produced sons, these sons are like young olive trees sitting around your table. Even as the sons of a house sit around the table, olive trees would be planted around the table. And I think that is figurative. I can't imagine somebody planting olive trees around their dining room table in ancient Israel. The olive tree was particularly luxuriant. I am not familiar with olive trees personally, but I've read that they're very luxuriant, and so that's a good metaphor to talk about very vigorous children. In verse 4, in this very way, the psalmist says, the man who fears the Lord will be blessed, i.e. he will be happy. So, having children makes one happy, like all of those olive trees around the table. If you have a bunch of children around your table, you will be blessed, i.e. happy. Now, this is assuming that they are raised right, but assuming that, children are a good thing. Contrast that with all the secular humans today who are always talking about population reduction. Oh, we need a pandemic or two to reduce the population so that the rest of us can live. We need to abort babies so that the rest of us can live. That is not the attitude of the scriptures. Now, of course, I realize there was a lot less population in the olden days than there is now, but that doesn't gainsay that even today, people love to have children. Even with all the anti-marriage ideology that there is out there, there is a divine instinct in the human race to have children, to reproduce ourselves. Look at the women who were trying to get pregnant and spending fortunes on fertility drugs, despite the fact that we could adopt babies. Instead, we kill them. We abort them. But nonetheless, there are people who really want to get pregnant. In verse 5, the psalmist continues, "May the Lord bless you from Zion." Now, in the Old Testament, the term Zion has literal and figurative uses. Zion can refer physically to the city of David, that tongue of land that extends southward from Mount Moriah through the middle of the two valleys, the Tiberian Valley on the west and the Kidron Valley on the east, and the land extends all the way to the Valley of Hinnom in the south. That's the city of David proper. Sometimes Zion refers to the city of David plus Mount Moriah to the northwest of the north and northwest of the city of David. Sometimes Zion refers to the whole city of Jerusalem, and sometimes Zion refers to the whole land of Israel. Now, that's the literal use of Zion. There is a figurative use in the Old Testament, those who believe in God. And that figurative use is also used in the New Testament, Hebrews 12:22. "Instead, you have come to Mount Zion," says the author of Hebrews to the Hebrew Christians. "You have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem," which of course is the church. Now, what is the psalmist referring to here when he says, "May the Lord bless you from Zion"? Well, there's two possibilities. If the psalmist was written in the time of David, when the Tabernacle of David was on Mount Zion, the city of David, that's when David built a special tabernacle there to put the ark, when he brought the ark from Obed-Edom's house, which is at Kiriath Yearim, just to the northwest of Jerusalem. You recall that story. Well, if that's when this psalm was written, "May the Lord bless you from Zion," he could do that because that's where the ark was. That's where God was, because that tabernacle built by David was where God lived at the time. His presence was there. So "may the Lord bless you from Zion" makes sense. If the psalm was written later during the time of Solomon, then Zion could refer to the city of David plus Mount Moriah, because Solomon's temple was on Mount Moriah, and God could bless people from Mount Zion because he lives in the temple now on Mount Moriah, right north of the city of David. And of course, Mount Moriah is referred to as Zion many times. So, "May the Lord bless you from Zion. May the Lord bless you from where he lives, so that you will see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life." Notice that the psalmist conflates his personal happiness with the happiness and prosperity of the city that he lives in, the heavenly city. Well, not the heavenly city, but the godly city of Jerusalem. And that makes sense, because it's hard to be happy individually when all around you everything is bad. The city that you live in is corrupt, defeated, destroyed, and so forth. That's why it's hard to be happy in the United States of Sodom and Gomorrah right now. "So that you will see the prosperity of Jerusalem all the days of your life," verse 6, "and will see your children's children." Again, descendants are a good thing. Not only children, but children's children are things that make one happy and blessed. Peace be with Israel. Peace be with Israel. That sounds a lot like Psalms 125:5, another song of ascent, the author of which is unknown. "But as for those who turn aside to their crooked ways, the Lord will lead them away with the doers of iniquity. Peace be upon Israel. Shalom." I forgot to mention one thing back in verse 1. Let me pick it up here. "How blessed is everyone who fears the Lord, who walks in his ways." That is a re-expression of what is said in Psalms 112, the author of which is unknown. In verse 1 of that psalm, we read this, "Praise the Lord, how blessed is the man who fears the Lord, who greatly delights in his commandments." So that idea of happiness coming from obedience is not only found in Psalms 128. Ladies and gentlemen, on that very happy note, we have finished Psalms 128. And we are prepared to go to our next psalm, the next psalm of ascent, Psalms 129, which I will call, "They Have Afflicted Me From My Youth." A little bit negative. But nonetheless, I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.